This is recorded on the morning of July the 17th, 1970, in the offices of the Director of Athletics at Purdue University, Mr. Guy R. Mackey.
Jay.
Interview is with R.B. Eccles of the Department of History. This is for the Purdue University Archives. My error, it is Guy J. Mackey. Mr. Mackey, well, you start out with the usual question. Where were you born? Where were you educated in elementary school? And would you in general bring us up to the time that you first came to Purdue?
Bob, I was born in Glasgow, Kentucky in December 1905. And the family lived in Glasgow until 1912 when we moved to New Albany, Indiana, where I went to grade school and high school, and graduating from high school in September 1921. That was June 1921. I entered Purdue in the fall of 1921 and graduated from Purdue University in agriculture in the June of 1929.
May I ask what brought you to Purdue?
I had several friends who preceded me to Purdue, and one of them being a great athlete by the name of Cotton Wilcox. We were high school buddies, and a lot of his influence caused me to come to Purdue. Also, the fine reputation that Purdue had as an educational institution, and the course I wished to pursue in agriculture.
What was your major in agriculture?
My major in agriculture was agricultural education. I planned to work in agricultural education, teach and coach. But as sometimes happens, an opportunity came along in the fall of 1929, and I joined the freshman football staff.
Now, of course, you realize you haven't told me what you did as a football player at Purdue. How many letters did you make? What position did you play?
I played end, Bob. I played right end on the Purdue team of 26, 7, and 8. I enjoyed a great deal of my athletic participation and the fine people with whom I came in contact, including a great coach, Jimmy Phelan, and his assistants, and Noble Kaiser, the line coach, who later became my boss.
As head coach at Purdue.
That's right.
Did you by any chance ever happen to stop a president of a Big Ten school by the name of Hubdy?
I don't know how many times I stopped him, Bob. We played Minnesota in the fall of 1928, which was President Hubdy's senior year as well as mine, that is senior year in football, as well as mine, and we were defeated 15-0 that year that we played in 1928, and as fate would have it, 17 years after graduation in 1929, or in 1946, President Hubdy came to Purdue as my boss. He was a great football player and a fine man, as I was later to find out.
I take it this has not necessarily been unfortunate for the Director of Athletics and for the athletic program to do, that you've had a man as president who understood what you're trying to do.
No, President Hubdy has a very keen understanding of the problems of athletics. He has a very keen perception about the football team. I understand that the coaches from various times have asked him for plays, and in each instance I understand they've been very good ones. This has been a real fine association between the coaches and President Hubdy. He always made it very plain that he wanted a first-class program, and I think that he will tell you, or anyone connected with Purdue Athletics, that he has enjoyed his association with the athletic department here and the many people who have come to know him and admire him as president of the president of the university, and a man who has given great direction to the university as well as the helped us
now,
in our athletic program.
While we're on President Hubdy's athletic ideas and programs, you coached here, of course, under his predecessor when he was President Elliott. Is there a great deal of difference in the attitude of the administration towards athletics that you can tell between the two men?
Well, I would say this, that President Elliott asked for administration based on the fact, not of his participation in athletics and his great knowledge of the game, but he had a real feel for the place of athletics in an educational institution, which has been, I think, the dominating principle of athletics at Purdue. He wanted a very high-class program. He wanted us to turn out good young men in the professions in which they were to follow in later life. This was his dominating principle, but he didn't have the background that President Hubdy, which gave him the first-hand information about athletics.
Well, we got you up to the time you were a freshman coach. Take us from then.
Well, going back to the point of my participation as coach, I served my 1929 stint as a freshman coach, and then later in that year, Jimmy Phelan, who was the head football coach at that time, left us and went to the University of Washington to become head coach there. This left the head coach's job, of course, open at Purdue, and the then line coach, Noble Kaiser, became the head football coach. I, of course, had planned, as I told you, to teach agriculture and coach, but Mr. Kaiser afforded me the opportunity to stay at Purdue as his line coach. Of course, at that time, there were many details in running down the eligibility, securing jobs for the players, who worked in the fraternity houses and the restaurants around the campus. We didn't have this extensive grant and aid system that we have now at that time. And so the story went until Mr. Kaiser's death in 1940. Then I became an assistant to Mal Elward, who then became the football coach at the time of Mr. Kaiser's death, and also served in the capacity of assistant to the director. I forgot to mention that Mr. Kaiser had the dual responsibility of head coach and director. After this, the untimely death of Mr. Kaiser, there was an interim in which Dr. Elliott served as a director, and following this period of a year, then I was chosen to be the director of athletics in 1942.
And you have been director ever since?
I have served as director since that time, which means that the stint I have enjoyed in the Purdue family as an employee covers a period of 41 years up to the present time.
All right. Now we've got you career-wise. Next question, I suppose, would be something that you'd like to put on record about your experiences. Have you got some questions? Have you got a list of questions there that I could ask you in order to make this a little more structured? All right. Well, let's start out with your with the do you place any restrictions on your coaches in administering their respective sports?
I don't like to look at it as a restrictive measure. I like to look at this situation as a direction based on many things relating to the athletic program. Naturally, there are limitations of finances, there are limitations of schedules, and there are many other limitations the coach has to adhere to in order to operate his program most efficiently. We try to get the utmost of out of our competition and live within the rules. So that is mainly the restriction, you might say, that would be placed on any coach in administering his program.
Who does the scheduling, the coach or you?
Well, the coach in some sports, in most sports, the coaches go to the conference and make up their schedules with the remainder of their conference colleagues.
Now, by conference, you mean Western Conference?
Yes, I mean the Big Ten Conference, which has its main offices in Chicago.
What about finances connecting with scheduling?
Well, that's a very pertinent thing. Finances, of course, have changed direction in athletics the same as other things. At one time, the financing of an athletic program was relatively simple. We didn't have the extensive grants that we have today. Our program, of course, was more limited than it is today, and the problems were not nearly as complex as those that we experience at the present time. So operating an athletic program has gotten to be big business in this day and age.
About what does it mean for the average Big Ten school?
Well, for the average Big Ten school, I would say that the operation of an athletic program would come somewhat within the $2 million range.
Does it do that at Purdue?
Yes, we consider ourselves the average Big Ten school, and so we have our operating budget is right in the $2 million figure.
How much of this represents operating, building, and creating new establishments? You and I are talking in a beautiful new arena.
Well, our obligation to the new arena is around $250,000 to $300,000 a year to keep up the payments and to retire the debt. And so that's the what we term the critical point of our operation in balancing a budget, is to pay the operating costs of all the program, including coaches' salaries, equipment, travel, and so forth, and all of the expenses related to debt retirement.
Well, now there's one thing. Let's just get on the tape right now, because one time you were attacked most unfairly by representative of a state labor organization saying that you were using public money. As I understand, and let's get this right, the finances of the Purdue Athletic Department comes from the sale of tickets and from non-university budget sources. How much of this is right? Did I say it correctly?
This is completely correct. We do not use any university funds, no state funds, in the operation of our intercollegiate and athletic program. We make our money through gate receipts and through the grant and aid program, which through alumni subscriptions is helped tremendously. And all of this money goes into our total operating program, and I'm very happy to say that we do not use state money for operating our athletic program.
All right. There's a great deal of question today about how many games a team should play. Do you think that giving colleges the opportunity to play 11 football games would solve the problem financially and for national championships and so on?
I do not feel that the 11th game will completely solve our financial problems. I think it will only aid in getting some of the schools out of the red who are now operating their program in the in the red and helping them get in the black. But there's quite a bit of misconception about the operation of program and how can a school such as some of the powers who have had sellouts for many years get in the red in their operation. And it's simply this, that they're still trying to operate a full program, and in this day of mounting costs, and they have a stable income, and the mounting costs have caused them to go into the red. So it becomes a problem of what do they do? Do they continue to operate a full program, or do they cut back in some instances, or just what is the plan? And so thus came about the 11th game in the hopes that they could offset some of these costs through an extra game.
Let me ask you, just while we're on this, because you raised the problem of finance, which seems to be a big one, what is the cost of running a Purdue major sports program?
Well, we discussed that back in the first part of our interview, and our costs of operation run in the neighborhood of $2 million annually.
Can you break that down? Which is the most costly of the major sports?
Well, naturally, football is the most costly of the operating of the major sports, and this cost, of course, when you consider the extensive travel, when you consider the medical bills that you have related to injuries in athletics, and being a contact sport naturally leads to this sort of this sort of situation. But I don't mean that this is anything to fear. I just mean that it's a fact that we have to reckon with.
Do you see any great change in the structure of the collegiate sports scene? Do you see any great changes in it in the future?
I don't see a great change in the structure of the sports. I see a great change in the operation, which will be brought about through financial difficulties. I think that the amount of money available for other than the revenue-producing sports will have to be decreased. And I hope that this decrease does not bring about a decrease in the interest of the athlete for the games in which he participates.
In other words, your real objective is to let as many young men as possible participate in sport.
That is the objective of an athletic program in its true sense of value. And, of course, I feel that in many cases we've gotten away from that objective by financial aid itself detracting from the so-called love of the game, and some people getting discouraged because there's no financial assistance and failing to participate in the sport in which they would like to participate. But hopefully this will be minimized, but I can see a trend in that direction.
I take it the ideal situation is every young man can play on the team if he wants to.
That's true. That's still true. But as I say, the mere fact that there has been financial assistance given to the athlete, and that this is cut down, I don't know whether or not this will detract from the numbers who go out for the squads or not. I just don't know what's going to happen.
How does this affect the intramural program?
Well, we have the greatest intramural program in the United States here on this campus, and I'm glad you mentioned that. With our great intramural building, our program is, I think, far and away the best to anyone in the Big Ten, and perhaps the best in the country. And I'm proud to say that George Hannaford, who directs this program, who has the day-by-day operation in his hands, has done a magnificent job with intramurals here at Purdue University. We have great participation. and also the great club sport program that is emanated from this wonderful building that we have is something to be proud of. And I just can't say too much about the fine benefits which accrue to the young men and young women at Purdue University as a result of the great intramural program.
Of course, this actually what it means is that if you're not on a varsity sport, that doesn't mean you can't play it. You can still play baseball intramurally, can't you? The fraternities and so on.
We have everything that's included in the varsity program. Of course, we don't have football that you can play in pads, but they have some versions of football, tag football, touch football, and so forth they play. And every sport that's in the varsity program is in the intramural program, with the additions of many sports, of course, that are not played at the varsity level.
As, for example, the one I'm most interested in, crew.
Yes, and crew is a great sport here at Purdue University, and those young men really do a great job in representing their university, and they do it strictly for the love of the game and no financial reward.
Well, let us get back on this most difficult problem that you have financially. Is there a national trend in financially? Can it be handled by, do you think, by institutions individually or by conferences? How can it be handled?
Yes, the trend is national in scope because everyone has this financial burden. But of course, many different conferences and many different institutions handle their financial burden in different ways. Now, you spoke to me early in the program of the fact that our program is self-supported. Well, this is not true in lots of institutions. Lots of institutions are supported through state money, through money from alumni, and through other ways. But I am sure that everyone has the problem due to what I term increasing costs and stable incomes. And so I'm sure that this is a problem that is national in scope, but can be solved a great deal through the assistance and through the compiled information that everyone has relating to the problem.
Now, many schools, USC, for example, University of Southern California, used to use its athletic program to build science buildings and dormitories. Is that a national trend, one that we do not have here?
I believe, though, that the athletic situation exists, as I say, with the increasing costs. There's no money left to build science buildings, and the trend is to try and exist. And actually, the trend is going to the other extreme of taking money which is channeled into the universities for all things and having it shared in the athletic overall program for its pure existence. I hope that this does not happen at Purdue University. I think that it's a problem of getting together all of our resources, and still, if there's fat in the program, we have to cut out the fat and look to a realistic and self-supporting program. This has been my training, and this is the way I still feel about the matter, that it should be self-supporting.
Well, that that is a very forthright and good statement. Now, sit back and talk a little. You've been at this for 45 years. As a coach, player, and director, you've got to see some major and some minor changes in college athletics. Talk about that. What changes have you observed, both major and minor?
Well, I've seen the changes evolve from the pure joy of participation in athletics to the moving into the financial aid program. And I think there's been some change in the approach, but I believe that the overall integrity of the people in athletics and of the participants will survive all of the what I call degenerative influences.
What are those?
Well, the inclination to professionalize our sports, to take us into areas of competition in which we do not belong. That is, in other words, I call it a challenge to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. And this leads to bad practices in athletics, for I feel that we should compete on our own level, and the overall program should be for the physical values, for the values that we believe will stand these young men in good stead in their businesses and their chosen professions in later life. Because cut it as thin or as thick as you like, the thing to hold out in a college education is what is a young man enter, why does he enter, and what is his goal, and achieving these goals of, well, just plain employment in a profession after the successful achieving a degree is the main purpose in life. And it's not to train people for professional athletics, as some people look on the picture in a great deal of cases today, but it's to train the young man for a profession. We feel that we're succeeding very well here because as we look at the record, we graduate more of our athletes on time. I call that on time. In other words, the time from entrance to graduation in the regular time than any school in the Big Ten.
And now, I've heard it said by another Big Ten professor from Indiana that Purdue set up a PEM, that's physical education for men, major, in order to make it easy for Purdue athletes to come to Purdue and get a degree.
No, that's not the truth at all. Purdue set up the physical ed program so that we could graduate young men who could go out in the coaching profession, because that's a very fine profession, and it just added another profession that our young men could participate in. And I think that as you look at our Department of Physical Education, I say that this is a criteria as far as I'm concerned. Do your young people go out and progress, and they are not turned back to you and say they're not well prepared, and this has never happened to my has never come to my attention. We've had any graduates from our physical education school that could not compete with graduates from other institutions.
Of your total number of staff, how many, what percentage roughly, are in the teaching in the PEM program, apart from being full-time coaches?
Well, we have several. I don't know the percentage, but we have several people who are working in the physical education area, as well as being on the coaching staff.
You have more coaches, though?
Yes, we do.
Now, we're talking about changes, you said it was more, you were getting around the fact that the trend, perhaps unfortunate, was towards preparing boys for making boys be prepared for professional athletics rather than just for a collegiate program. Is this a national trend, do you think?
I really don't believe that the institutions enter into this with this in mind, but I think so many of our young people do follow the professional athletics trend that it lends to the supposition that this is happening. I think it's purely a supposition.
Well, now, when a young man comes to Purdue and is proficient, let's say, at football or basketball, he has a pretty good chance, if he wants to go into professional athletics, providing he's a distinguished undergraduate. We've got several quarterbacks in professional football that have been coached at Purdue. Now, is there anything in our program that prepared them for this except just excellence in playing the game?
It's just excellence in playing the game, and there's no preparation for the professional life. And I want plainly understood that I'm not knocking the professional game at all. And I think that this plays a very important part in some young men's lives in giving them the opportunity to get established financially, particularly in their preparation for the future. I think that it does play a good part in their lives, and I don't by any means wish to malign the people who are professional people. They are good people, and they have a profession which is a good profession, and we're proud of the young men who have made the professional names for themselves, such as Lenny Dawson, one of the outstanding ones that you can call to mind to present time. And I have I will predict that young Mike Phipps will make a fine name for himself in professional athletics and then go on to a great career in whatever profession he chooses.
We have people like Babe Demontcheff, who is a coach and doing well in Indianapolis, and I noticed last night that Lamar Lundy is, after having about 9 years in the sport, is going to retire.
Yes, the names there are just many, many names of young men whom I could mention, and I just call these names to your mind because they're the new ones. They're the ones who are presently in the newsprint.
But
yes.
Your really great production, though, is in young men who go from here and coach high school.
That's right. That's right. Those are the greatest numbers of young men who go into this, and we have many young men who go from the physical education into not only teaching but sales and other phases of our national life.
I'm thinking of a friend, personal friend of mine, who's done very well coming out of Purdue. Is Joe Krupa.
Joe is a fine young man and a great tackle, and he's doing a great job in high school coaching now after serving well the professional field.
Certainly he's done both. Let's get down to something personal now. What do you think are your major accomplishments as director of athletics?
Well, I look on the facilities which will serve young people in many, many years to come as being the major achievement, in addition to what I feel the operation of a good, sound athletic program. I look to the expansion of our Rossade Stadium, to the golf courses, to the Fieldhouse, to the many fine athletic fields, which I should term play fields, which not only service the varsity but also this great student body of ours, to the wonderful recreation gymnasium, to the what I consider one of the finest of its kind, the new arena, and these are facilities which will serve untold student generations for the future and are not a thing of here today and which will be passed over for the future. So these I consider to be the things of which I'm proudest.
Did you found John Perdue Club, which is a club of alumni and friends of the university?
I didn't found it. I had some joint work in founding it with Cordon Hall, who is now our retired Scholarship Foundation director. And I'm having a great deal of pleasure working with the new man, Dick Thornton, in this fine activity.
Just may I go and say that I find that, as far as Crewe is concerned, he's most encouraging and helpful.
Dick is young, has a lot of ideas. He's a great idea man, and he, I will predict, will do a fine job for the future for all phases of student enrichment and assisting students in all fields and all ventures. He has quite a vital part to play in the Grand Prix, which is, I think, is a fine student
activity. Yes, I took part in that this year. It is good. Let me ask you now. We're talking purely about Purdue, but expand this a little. How does our building program and our general program compare with that of other Big Ten schools? Are there some that take a different tack, or some that have more, or so on?
Well, I think our program, as a program, is on a par with any Big Ten institution. I think our facilities are the finest in the Big Ten. We are not taking a backseat to anyone, Big Ten or nationally, in our facilities. And I feel that we just rate at the top in all the activities and all the facilities in the Big Ten.
Well, now, and does a place like Ohio State have a different problem than you?
Oh, yes. All of us have different problems, different approaches to our problems. And I don't know their interior problems. I do know only the problems which emerge at the conference meetings, at the Big Ten meetings. But their internal problems, I'm not...
Well, what are the big conference problems that come out at the meetings, if you can talk about them?
Well, the problems which emerge at the meetings are problems which are which affect all of us. And those problems, a lot of them are covered by rules as to how we approach them. So it's a great deal... has a great deal to do with how, with us putting our problems on the table and seeing where one institution may have something which is mutually of assistance to all of us, which will fit in the total picture. So this conference approach is a great approach and has been and will be, continue to be in the future, one of the strengths of our institutions.
Isn't one of your big problems a problem of competition for recruitment and recruitment itself?
Yes, that has been a problem for all the many years I've been involved in athletics and will continue to be. The recruiting problem is a very crucial one. It has to have very rules which control recruitment. And because if you don't and make it equal for everyone who's doing the job, why, it causes a great deal of friction every place that you turn. That only is not only a statement of fact for the Big Ten, but it's national in scope.
Let's get on this right now and hit it, because you always hear that the Big Ten teams can come in with money and, in essence, by a young man. Now, as I understand, one of our Big Ten schools has been in trouble with this sort of thing lately, and the alumni, they say, always come in. You hear this about, I don't want to go on record as saying the schools for you, but I'll say I hear gossip about Ohio State, and we know what happened to Illinois when the coach was relieved of his job. This sort of thing, does this plague the conference?
Well, there's always that. When you're dealing with people, and as many people as are involved in these problems, there's always, in the success of an institution, there's always that question in the minds of a lot of people, well, how did they get to be dominant? How did their program get to the point of where they are winning every year? And we have rules, very rigid rules, to cover those things. And of course, at times people will step out of bounds and violate these rules. But as you know, past history will tell you that there are some very stringent regulations which prevent paying money to people, let's say, and violations by coaches and others, which would give an undue advantage, an unfair advantage to the school involved. So we have a system which has a governing body called the faculty representatives in the Big Ten, and they do a great job in seeing that the educational advantages are upheld in athletics, and that the coaches and the directors come under a series of regulations which prevent them from doing these things, and in case that someone does have a violation, see that the penalty is severe enough that it will get the institution back in line, or even have very severe penalties levied on the institution involved in any irregularities.
Do you think we've had good faculty representation? I know two of our faculty representatives that I should think would almost guarantee our amateur status from the character of the two men. I knew Dr. Estee, of course. He was my old department head. And I know Vern Freeman. Have we had good representation from the faculty?
We have been given the greatest of representation that you could imagine. And both of the men you have mentioned have been outstanding in the conference affairs. And, of course, I had Dr. Estee at the beginning of my career, and I've been with Vern Freeman for over 25 years. He just, of course, just recently retired, and I had the greatest respect for Vern Freeman. We worked not only as colleagues, but we worked with a great respect for the conference and for the institution which we represent. And Vern's responsibility was always respected by me because he had his area of responsibility was the academic and and even the great planning which has gone into the furthering of our programs. So I have the utmost respect for my faculty representatives and also the athletic committee which has represented Purdue through the years.
How do you think other schools have failed? Fared in the Big Ten with this. Do you think we're as good as any, if not better?
I think we're just as good as any, and I think I don't want to say we're better. I think we're as good as anyone in the Big Ten, and as far as that's concerned, I think that we've not only given leadership in the Big Ten, but also in the national picture, and we have a great dedicated group of people who represent us.
While we talk about the national picture, are there some conferences that are not, shall we say, dedicated to the sport, but more to professionalism than ourselves?
No, I would not make that charge. I don't feel that it's within my province to make such a charge. And as far as I'm concerned, this is purely speculation.
Mm-hmm. The rules of most other conferences, like the Atlantic Conference and the Southeast and the Pacific Coast, they're about the same as the Big Ten.
They have their rules which apply to their particular areas. And, of course, as you and I know, various sections of the country have different ideas about how things operate, and I fully respect their rules and why, and I respect their differences of operation. And I don't, I would not presume to sit here and say that we're better than they, because their conditions are different than us. And I have the greatest of admiration and respect for those people in the Southern Conference, the Pacific Coast, all over, because they are trying to do a very efficient job of trying to run their operations. And knowing these people personally, I would say that we have a great bunch of people from south, north, east, and west who are operating your athletic program.
Well, this is very, very, very nice. You make it a point to, I notice we always do in scheduling games, we always have some with these other conferences, don't we?
It has been throughout the years of operation, it has been my hope that we could move around the various sections of the country to appear before our alumni in these areas and to get Purdue known throughout these areas. But it is the most difficult situation to try to schedule games in the areas that you would like a great number of times. And particularly, it is hard to get games in the East, because we have assumed quite a stance. I'm speaking now of football. We do appear in basketball and track and some of the other sports.
And in crew, sir.
And in crew. That's correct. You just didn't give me a chance to fill that in. But we would like to appear and carry Purdue's banner in all the sections of the country. And the reason I said football is because we have such tremendous crowds who see our team perform football. And we have done this to a great extent.
Well, the game of football we play is obviously a little different level of game than you play in the Ivy League.
Yes, that's true. The Ivy League football has not, shall I say, been as well.
They're not competitive with us.
That's true, and I just got myself in a position where I didn't know. I got in a dead-end street there, because I have a great respect for the Ivy League, and it's the thing I spoke of. You have various ideas about what's good for your section of the country and relating to the competition.
Certainly. Well, we come to a problem where, from where you sit, I think you can talk with authority on it. What is your single most demanding problem facing today's college athletic directors?
Well, we get back to the problem. The most perplexing problems we face are relating to national rules and regulations, which will be fair to everyone and will affect everyone in a like manner. This is why we have the National Collegiate Athletic Association, which has rules which apply nationally. Our recruiting rules, our finances, which are, as I say, comparable to all, and which is a universal problem today. It is a hard and very difficult thing to make rules which will satisfy everyone, which will be fair to people universally. It is a tough job to enforce these rules equally and with fairness to everyone. So the great picture, as it emerges today to me, is a national awareness of the problem and a national reaction which will be of fairness and equality for all the members in this great athletic conference. So I say that, let's put it plainly and say it's going to take a great deal of goodwill. It's going to take a great deal of initiative. It's going to take a great deal of foresight to bring all these factors into play and put the puzzle together. I have a great faith in the people in athletics that given the proper amount of time and given the amount of study necessary that the problem will be solved. But it is a tremendous problem, and in the background is this specter of financial aid and just how to administer it. And so we are in a tremendous area of, I wouldn't say transition, that's not the word, but an area of really solidifying the things which we know are good and to put them together to the end result of being good for all of the schools involved.
May I ask a question on this that has always puzzled me? I think what we've been talking about, in the sense you've been talking about, is the problem of, let us say, a good young, fine young man coming out of some of these wonderful Pennsylvania and Ohio high schools. He's physically good, he moves well, he's tough, he's on his toes, and there are 15 schools that want him. Now, is this the sort of thing you're talking about, a national rule where everybody who is might be interested in having him come to their university has an equal opportunity to talk?
Yes, and we have such rules today in the NCAA, because the NCAA has a national qualifying score of 1.6. Ours in the Big Ten is 1.7, which is just slightly higher.
In other words, a boy coming to Purdue has got to have a little better scholastic average, let's say, than go to a conference.
To qualify, yes, qualify. For entrance. Right, that's correct.
In other words, you can't even talk to him if he doesn't have this.
Well, you can talk to him, but you can't offer him a an offer of financial assistance to enter your school.
You know, frequently we see these wonderful young high school athletes, and then they show the various representatives talking to them and so on. We're, in a sense, we can't go into the market for the best physically simply because of this 1.7 rule.
Well, it's so near. I just make that not as a point of separation, saying we're a great deal better. It's so very near. The only thing I mean to point out is that all of the people who belong to the National Collegiate Association must have a qualifying score of 1.6, and it is slightly higher in various areas, but not enough to really have an appreciable effect as to the interest from the athlete. Only point this out to tell you that by combination, and this is the same system we use to determine the boys' qualification for Purdue, combination of high school standing and College Board scores to make such a prediction. And this prediction is only gives a boy a 50-50 chance, or you the selector, that is, that you have a boy who will graduate from your institution. So a 50-50 chance. But of course you don't take into consideration the boy's initiative, his desire, and all of those things. You're just taking purely the amount of promise he shows.
Well, now there's one thing that you hear criticized, that all recruitment programs are criticized with, that is, you bring the boy to the campus and you show him around and you give him a sales talk. You may get that from half a dozen other schools. Isn't the end not only what you can do for him financially in the way of a scholarship, but isn't a lot of it the character of the men he talks to when he comes to meet the coaches and the staff?
It certainly is. You are very correct in that. And that is why, as an administrator, you seek a head coach or a man who is directing your program and the coaches under him, the highest and best qualified people you can get. And that means men of character, men of integrity, and men who have the ability of sales to these young men, selling them on the institution, on themselves, on the program.
Let me just ask a question. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to. Do you have a hand in selecting the head coaches for varsity sports?
Yes, I certainly do. But we, first of all, seek a list of all the best people that we can seek through friends that we know in the game, through commissioners of conferences, and through every source that we possibly can. And when we have screened all of these people, then we finally arrive at the man that we would like to hire, and then with the permission of the president, why, and of course we get the advice from our athletic people, from our athletic committee. I prize very highly the opinion of our athletic committee and the men that we seek. Because,
well, may I ask you for a specific example, one with it, whose choice, and may I say I have concur with most heartily, is your selection of Mr. DeMoss to succeed Jack Mollenkopf. Now, what were the factors that, this is a specific example, that influenced the selection of Bob DeMoss?
Well, first of all, I'm inclined to think that a good organization that has proven itself, there are more than one persons available. I mean, more than one person in that operation who are responsible for the success of the operation. So the first thing then, if that are true, the first thing in the where some head-to-head man moves on, or he retires, or in any manner, the first thing to do is to screen your staff, which has been successful in this operation, and see to whom you would look for the next man who has been who had the heaviest hand in doing the job in this staff that remains. Of course, naturally, if you do not feel there's anyone there, then you go outside. But it was a very simple matter as far as I was concerned in the selection of Bob DeMoss, because he had been 20 years in the organization. He developed more good quarterbacks than anybody in the business, so that's the prime place to start your football team is with the quarterback, and so his responsibility has been that. In addition to that, he had been the tactician, so to speak, in putting all the offense together, and he's a very astute young man. He had been in demand at coaching schools and all over the country, and is well thought of by other people. So that being true, we should take a look at him, and that's what we did, and that's how we decided that Bob DeMoss was to be the new head football coach at Purdue University.
You've got to have a man who likes to compete, don't you?
Right. If he doesn't like competition, he doesn't belong in the game.
And another thing, too, in most sports, is the desire on the part of the kids to do well under the coach. You've got to consider the effect the coach is going to have on the character, don't you?
That's correct. The feeling that they're going to give leadership, and good leadership, of course, that all involves character and the other things that you talk about. I wouldn't call it, I would term it another thing. I don't think of it as character building. I think of it as leadership, and leadership, naturally, the right type of leadership develops character. And there's no question about in the contact sport that you're speaking of, now we're talking about football, that in order to have the type of teams that we've had, there has to be men of character and men of who desire to compete to make it successful.
I notice a little different attitude in the part of, perhaps it's got to be the reflection of Purdue's coaching staff with some of the other competitors that I see on the floor and on the football field. We, on the whole, play a highly competitive game, but winning within the rules. There are times that I've seen teams play in our stadium that I thought they didn't quite live up to what I would call good attitude on the field in the way of play. We don't do that here, do we?
Well, we certainly, if there are individual instances, it's certainly very much frowned on, because this is constantly brought up to the young people who are playing the games that they must play within the rules, that there's no place for the guy who is violating the rules in any respect. And so we try to teach it. We dwell on it, and the coaches do at all times. And of course, you and I know that you can't be 100%. There's no 100%, but we certainly do strive for that sort of a situation, and you'll notice violations on occasion, but this is certainly not condoned by the coaches, or they're not taught that way.
Let's go off the tape for a second. Excuse me, sir. We're back on the tape. Now let me ask you something of a personal nature. I notice that you have some plaques on the wall. Would you tell me roughly what they are? And they represent honors and recognition of your service. What do you think is the most important of these?
I look on the 1944 Leather Medal Award as being the greatest honor that I've received at Purdue. And of course, I've been honored by being made an honorary member of the Gimlets and the Reamers and the
can't think of
that. The Iron Key, the band, and the several other things that are too numerous to mention here.
Have you been on any national committees of the NCAA?
Yes, I've been on the committee for several committees which related to the financial operation and setting up the structure of athletics and the various institutions throughout the country. So that has been part of and the Big Ten. I'm still a member of the financial operation of the conference, and We always serve on committees which are set up to explore the possibility of better operation in athletics for the conference annually. So this has been a real important and phase of my athletic life and serving.
Well, has it been worth it?
Of course it's been worth it, and I, like a lot of other people, say, as far as I'm concerned, I've never worked a day in my life, because my profession has been so rewarding, and it's a real pleasure to do it.
You had fun?
I've had fun at my profession and in serving Purdue University and the athletic picture as a whole.
Well, thank you very much. This is possibly the first of a series of interviews, but at this time we will conclude the interview with Director Guy J. Mackey and R.B. Eccles on July 17, 1970. This is to be used by the Purdue University Archives.